All right, welcome to the Free Stretch, brought to you by Bill Curry Ford here on JoeBucksFan.com, Conference Championship Weekend Edition. I am Bobby Fenton. As always, thank you for joining me. And, you know, we're here now. We've got three football games left in the year. We've got 2 days of football left in the year. Had a good time with the divisional round weekend. Had a good time with the College Football National Championship. Now we got ourselves a Final Four. We're going to talk about those two games today. Talk about what happened last weekend. Got some things about the 2019 Bucks numbers-wise I want to get to on the show today. And, of course, Rick Stroud wrote about it the other day, and it's, you know, that time now where we're going to start getting into, you know, basically what amounts to a game of chicken between Jameis Winston's side and representatives and the Bucks. And the report was by Rick Stroud that Jameis Winston's looking for that big contract and that he would be, quote, extremely unhappy with the franchise tag. It's going to be coming from all sides now, and we'll talk about that as well. But first of all, thanks to our sponsor, Bill Curry Ford, where right now, just like any other time, nothing special about it because this is what they always do, you can get anything they got on the lot, all right, that's new, pre-owned, used, whatever it is, and along with a high-quality vehicle, you're going to get the unlimited nationwide lifetime warranty, meaning that no matter how long you have the car, as long as you're still the owner, when you buy it at Bill Curry Ford, you can come back to them. Could be months, could be years later. And if you have engine trouble or something like that, you're covered under the warranty, which is, again, something you won't see anywhere else. And if you go to the website, BillCurryFord.com, that's C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com, you can see all the inventory. And then, remember, you'll get the warranty. You'll get 1 year free service, like oil changes and all that. You just take them back to Bill Curry Ford. They'll do it. No problem there. And then you also get 10 years unlimited roadside assistance. Eliminates your need for AAA or anything like that. All that, plus you can see everything they have at the website, BillCurryFord.com. It's all there for you. Check them out. Or go in person and talk to my good friend Sean Sullivan. Get the Joe Bucks Fan discount. If you mention the website, mention me or mention the Free Stretch, they're a mile and a half north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway, where they've always been serving the Tampa area for almost 60 years now. So thanks to them. And I know that everybody was watching the games this past weekend. If you remember my show, if you listened to my show last week, I talked about how, you know, there's always that one unpredictable thing that happens out of those four games. And something that seems like, I mean, there's always a couple of games that you don't know what's going to happen either way. But then even out of the ones you think you do, something crazy happens. And I told you how, as a gambler, I was thinking, well, hey, the Chiefs and the Ravens, you know, they're both 10-point favorites. Just tease both of them down to 3. They're both going to win, you know. Do that, and then it's easy money. Of course, the Ravens lost the game outright and got hammered by a Tennessee team that I have no idea, folks. And this is what I keep telling everybody about the Bucks, you know. Like, don't think it can't happen, like, quickly. Never mind that the 49ers were 4-12. But, I mean, I don't have any idea why. And it's just, look, everything is one game. Everything's random. We know this about sports. Saw it with the Lightning last season. That was a 4 or best of 7 playoff series. But no matter what it is, these things can happen. So you've got a Titans team that does something incredibly surprising over in Baltimore. And then even the Chiefs in winning did something incredibly surprising, getting down by a score of 24-0 and then reeling off a 51-7 run after being down 24-0. And then the Packers and 49ers wins were a little more, I don't want to say predictable, because I thought Seattle was going to win, but that wasn't exactly that was a coin flip game, I thought, and then the Packers ended up hanging on. And so now they visit San Francisco. So we got Titans Chiefs at 3:05 on Sunday, Packers 49ers at 6:40. The AFC and NFC championship games are set. Now, as a Bucks fan, I always look at things through the lens of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So, you know, you get down to the Final Four, and just to give it a frame of reference, I didn't just look at the team's records this year, because if you're in the Final Four, if you're in the conference championship game, you know, you probably had at least a halfway decent season, although the Titans were only 9-7, which is only 2 games better than the Bucks were, and really, and we'll get to it in a minute, that Titans-Bucks game factored pretty big looking back at it now. But the Titans were also 9-7 last year. They've been 9-7 the last 2 years. You got a Chiefs team that was 12-4 last year and 12-4 this year. They're a powerhouse. They're good. You got a Packers team that was 13-3 this year, but they were 6-9-1 last year. And then you've got a 49ers team that was, of course, also 13-3, but 4-12 last year. And just got thumped by the Bucks in that 4-12 season, okay? So this is what I'm saying. When I look at things through the lens of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, it goes to show you how quickly things can happen and how not all that far off your Tampa Bay Buccaneers are. It's frustrating, especially when I watch the Titans. It's frustrating to see a team like the Titans playing this Sunday when I saw that team beat the Bucks on, first of all, an atrocious blown dead fumble on that fake punt attempt that got blown up, and Devin White ended up picking the fumble up and scoring, and they blew it dead, and it definitely would have been a touchdown. Now, there wasn't like 4 seconds left when that happened. There was still like 2 or 3 minutes or whatever it was, so the Titans still could have maybe won, but there was that. And I look at the game the Bucs played in Tennessee and how they were down 14-3 after basically giving the Titans 2 touchdowns. They had the one early snap by Jensen that went off Jameis's helmet. He wasn't even looking at him. And that set the Titans up right there at like the 1 yard line or something like that. And then there was a Malcolm Butler interception that Jameis threw, that Butler return inside the 5. It was 14-3 in that game before you could get the popcorn bag open. Then the Bucs came back, should have won the game. Of course, we all know what happened after that. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I always say this. There's such a fine line in any given season. I mean, you get 16 games, and out of those 16 games, a handful of them will be like no-brainers. They were decided one way or the other with lots of time left, and there wasn't much you could have done, woulda, coulda, shoulda. But like half your games in the NFL are woulda, coulda, shoulda every year. Record in close games, they've looked at it. It's not really correlated to how good your team is. So it's like, you know, it's not like good teams do better in close games than bad teams. It's more random than people think. What the really good teams do is play fewer close games. They win more games by more. But in reality, like for a lot of the teams, except for a very select few, they're not that different. The Bucs are not that different from the Titans, okay? And I don't even think they're that different from the Packers, to be honest with you, or the 49ers. They don't have a guy like Patrick Mahomes. But, I mean, when you look at the 2019 Bucs and you look ahead to 2020, you know, you look at all these things. Greg Allman wrote a really good piece for The Athletic this week going over some of the numbers, some of the pertinent numbers from the 2019 Bucs season. This interested me because, again, maybe I just needed to stop looking back too much, but I want to know why things happen. We all do. I want to know how you make sense of things. What caused the Bucs 2019 season to be the way it was? Either better than it was if you didn't think it was going to be that good, or not as good as you think it could have been. So the Bucs defense, he looked at that, and of course, we've talked about it before, but the Bucs, if you just go off scoring defense, were like in the bottom 3 or 4 teams in the league. If you go by advanced stats that measure, you know, like DVOA and EPA and things like that, how the team actually played, the Bucs defense is one of the top 10 defenses. So, of course, there were the 7 pick-sixes that added to the Bucs points allowed total, which had nothing to do with the defense. That's 48 points. One team missed an extra point after a pick six. And then, of course, you also, and this doesn't show up as directly, but there were 15 drives this year. 15 drives that Bucs opponents started inside the 30-yard line of Bucs territory. That is by far the most in the NFL. The second most was 11. And again, that comes back to Jameis Winston's turnovers. There was a couple that were fumbles. I think for the most part, that was Jameis Winston's picks that set up another team inside the Bucs 30 and put the defense behind the 8-ball. The Bucs defense this year was actually really, really good in those situations. 15 times inside the 30, they gave up just 5 touchdowns in those 15 drives that already, you know, imagine a team starting to drive at your 25, at your 15, at your 18, at your 7, whatever. They only gave up 1/3 of the time a touchdown. 5 other times, they gave up a field goal. And the other 5 times, they gave up no points. There were 2 missed field goals, and they got 3 fumbles. Now, of the 5 TDs they allowed, in those 15. They were important. Two of those were the Tennessee game that I already mentioned, where they had the fumble on the bad snap, or the premature snap, and then the interception return down inside the five. And they lost that game. One of them happened at Atlanta. I think it was one of those games where Jameis threw it on the first play of the game. And they ended up winning that game anyway after giving up the touchdown to Atlanta. One was in the home loss to New Orleans, which was a debacle, but that's what got it started. And the Bucs actually kind of came back in that game and made it closer, and it could have been closer still if not for that opening touchdown. And then, of course, again, a debacle was the game in London, technically a home game, but the game against Carolina, where Jameis did it on the first pass of the game. So if you look at the Bucs' defense and how they played, and we've talked about it already, but just another set of numbers that rams at home, you know, how much that the Bucs could even see even more improvement next season in the results they're getting. There's how you perform, and there's actual results. And oftentimes, how you perform is directly related to actual results. But other times, it's not. There's a lot of randomness out there. Turnovers are another one that aren't as correlated to anything as people think it is. Teams have good turnover years. They're not a good turnover-forcing team or ball hawks or anything. They just, you know, how to. And then the next year, they'll be negative. And in fact, teams that have really bad turnover ratios one year are always expected to improve as a team the next year because it's unlikely they'll have that same turnover ratio again. It's very random. Now, the Bucs defense this year got results well under where their performance level was. And so it excites me at least a little bit thinking about next season that if we can get that same type of performance or better, that they're more likely to get better results to follow that. Of course, a lot of that depends on the quarterback, and that brings us back to what I was saying about Rick Stroud. Jameis, and again, this is what was predicted. Everybody's going to have something to say. The report was from the NFL Draft Network, and again, the quote was that Winston would be, and I'm quoting these two words, extremely unhappy with the franchise tag. He thinks this is his chance to cash in. He's looking for the $30 million. And of course he is. That's not surprising. But you know, people are going to read this and go, oh, Jameis, extremely unhappy. He better understand. He's lucky to even be. Listen, calm down, everybody. It's just business. I would expect his representatives to try to posture and make it sound like the franchise tag is not really an option. They're looking for that contract. And of course, then you'll hear things. Again, they could be planted by agents or planted by Jameis' representatives and team representatives as well on the other side. You know, oh, this team is not interested in Jameis. Oh, there's a report that, you know, how many teams are there that could be interested in him that are looking for a quarterback? You could argue, let's say he wants that big contract and the Bucs tell him to pound sand. Go see if you can get that $30 million a year. I dare you. Who's going to give it to you? So who? Carolina, maybe. Could be that team. You know, they have Kyle Allen. They could draft a guy, but they don't really have a set guy. Trubisky sucks. The Bears say they're staying by him, but maybe he could, you know, the Chargers moving on from Phillip Rivers. I mean, there's a few, okay? But like Rick Stroud correctly, it was the last line of his article, he said, it seems as if the game of chicken has begun. And that's exactly what it is. And the Dolphins are another. The Dolphins aren't taking Jameis Winston, but they don't have a guy right now. They got Fitzpatrick already. Josh Rosen, don't think either of those guys is the answer. No reason to think there's a huge demand, is my point here, that Jameis Winston can threaten the Bucs. Oh, well, other teams want to give me that contract, blah, blah, blah. You know, I don't think he'll get it. And so if he wants to say he's going to pout if he gets the franchise tag, well, if the Bucs didn't give it to him and just let him go, I doubt that we'd be sitting here watching. I mean, he would definitely be acquired by somebody. There's no question. I mean, quarterbacks are definitely a commodity in this league, unlike any other position. And he is a top half quarterback, even with the interceptions. But is he worth what he thinks or what he's saying he's worth? He might not even believe that. His agents might not even believe that. Again, it's posturing. The smart thing to do, if the Bucs are going to keep him, is to say, well, we'll go ahead and deal with you being extremely unhappy. But he's had 5 years now. This is a rookie contract. You play that rookie contract, you got those years to go out and get that big second contract. And he's done a lot of good things, of course, in those 5 years. But at the end of the day, he hasn't done what the Bucs want him to do. They haven't been a playoff team or even really been close except for one of the five seasons. And that's not all his fault. I mean, a quarterback as important as he is, does not single-handedly lead a team to the playoffs, and everybody thinks that, but that's not true. But he hasn't put them in the positions that he needed to put them in. And obviously, is the ability there? Sure it is. But he's in no position to posture and have anybody, you know, crap themselves. Oh my God, he's going to be unhappy with you, the franchise tag. Well, oh well, you know. So even if the Bucks are going to keep him, that this is not changing, okay? In my opinion, and I'm not saying I've got anybody inside the Bucks who has said this, none of us knows for sure, but the Buccaneers are keeping him for one more season, and it's a prove-it year, basically, or they're not keeping him at all, and I think they're keeping him. But there's not going to be any multi-year. I think they'd be crazy to do that, and I think everybody knows that. So anyway, something in Jameis's favor here I wanted to bring up, too, because this goes back to Greg Allman's article. The Bucs and Jameis individually did lead the NFL in passes of 30 yards or longer. Winston had 31 this year. That's not just the most in the NFL this year. It's the second most if you take the last six seasons combined. Only Patrick Mahomes in 2018, when he had 33, has had more passes of 30 yards or more in a season. And again, we knew Jameis could do that. This is Bruce Arians' offense kind of starting to take shape and things like that. And so, yeah, the Jameis Winston showed he can be a successful passer in that offense, and he didn't just throw it downfield to Mike Evans or Chris Godwin. He had nine different targets on those 31 passes of 30 yards or more. And so, again, it's a calculus, man. I mean, in a lot of ways, he's perfect for what Bruce Arians is trying to do. If he can just, you know, we've talked all about, I'm not going to do it again today. We do it almost every show. But in the meantime, just wanted to throw all the numbers out there. They're all pertinent. Also, for the defense's part, they allowed 31 passes of 30 yards or more, the same number. That was the most in the NFL. It was tied for the most. And some of that is the product of Todd Bowles' defense being more aggressive. It's a little more all or nothing. Overall, I don't think anybody did. I mean, did you notice? Oh, they give up a ton of deep balls. I mean, there were some parts of the year where, and they got better later in the year, but I didn't feel like they were walking gasoline cans or anything like that. And again, by the end of the year, they got better and better and better. The PFF Pro Football Focus grades out for the whole season for all players. And just to give you a couple noteworthy ones from the Bucs, Chris Godwin, by Pro Football Focus's standards, and some people will disagree with Pro Football Focus and on certain things and others won't. I'm just giving you context here. He was the highest overall receiver. He had a rating better than any wide receiver in football. His drop rate was only 1.1%, which was by far the lowest. And in fact, he has the lowest drop rate of anybody in football, not just for this past season, but over the past five seasons from 2015 through 2019. All players overall, Chris Godwin has the lowest rate. And there's Larry Fitzgerald up on that list and a couple other guys. Ryan Jensen was one of the top centers as well, did a really good job this year after being very lowly rated by PFF last season. So those are all things, again, just thought that were worth mentioning. And so when you look at it here, going into 2020, just in case you're wondering what everybody else thinks, the preseason Super Bowl odds are out for 2020, where the Super Bowl will be in Tampa Bay, by the way. The Bucs are at 66-1. That is tied for 24th. They're in a little group of teams that includes the Panthers, Giants, and Jets, and the Bucs at 66-1. And again, there's no need to care about any of this because if you look at who the Super Bowl odds said this year would be around, I don't think the 49ers were very high in the preseason. I would have to go back and check, but I'm almost certain they were close to triple digits. And the Titans probably weren't all that high either. And even the Packers, who, you know, probably get a little bit more of a nod because, again, these are based on what they think people will bet. And they know people will bet the Packers. But they were coming off a 6-9 in 1 year. And Aaron Rodgers, you know, didn't look like, and still actually hasn't really looked as much like himself, despite their success. Chiefs would have probably been the only one of the final four teams to rate that highly. And again, it's a year-by-year thing. You never want to be a prisoner of the moment. You never want to take what's directly in front of you, and since that thing just happened, say, this is how things are because this is how it just happened. Every year it's different. For example, and Thomas Bassinger talked about this week, you know, football's changed a lot in the past 10, 15, 20 years. And the way offenses look in particular has changed a lot. The running game And it's always going to be important to be able to run the ball at least a little bit, but the running game does not play nearly the role that it did in the past. Quite simply, and this is really just physics more than anything, there's more value in throwing the ball than there is in running it. You can get a football from 1 yard line to another yard line 20 yards away, over everybody's heads and into the hands of one of your players much more quickly and efficiently than you can by handing it to somebody and trying to run through a million people. That's just, I mean, that's physics. Like, it's more efficient to pass the football than to run it. If you're trying to score points, you should be passing the football more. Everybody knows this now. It's not even disputed. And teams do it more. But then this season, what happened? Well, the Tennessee Titans, look at them. Here they are. In the AFC Championship, they're one of the final four teams. Derrick Henry's a man beast. But even Derrick Henry is just one guy. But basically the style of the Tennessee Titans isn't throw it all over the yard all the time, this, that, and the other. Their games are a little more lower scoring, and they've been able to get ahead. That's the key. Remember that. And then Derrick Henry goes and does his thing. Ryan Tannehill, by the way, just in case you were wondering, going back to those PFF grades I just mentioned, Ryan Tannehill was the number one rated quarterback for the whole season, not just like for the past few games, for the whole season. He beat out Lamar Jackson and everybody else. Now, again, you might be saying, screw PFF, dude. I don't care about all those stupid numbers. That's nerd stuff, dude. Get the hell out of here with that. If you're one of those people, then fine. But I'm just, again, giving you context for all these things. So Ryan Tannehill may not, his name may not evoke thoughts of the other quarterbacks that you think of as great quarterbacks in this league, like Lamar Jackson, like Mahomes, you know, on and on and on. But he actually, just going by the numbers, and remember, the numbers don't know who's inside the uniform. They're just rating the performance and the value of each play, okay? Ryan Tannehill, at least according to one outlet, rated that high. He's not, that's not the only outlet. He was really, really good this year. So looking at the Titans, here they are. They don't look, they don't play the way the Chiefs do. They don't play the way that the Ravens did, and the Ravens are gone now, thanks to the Titans. They don't do those types of things. So, should the Bucs and other teams be looking to mimic this type of plan? Should this be the new model? The Titans are showing it can still be done. And, you saw what the Ravens did all year long, and once the playoffs happened, the Titans went right in there and hammered them with some old-school smash-mouth football. Lamar Jackson couldn't do what he wanted to do, and they ran it with Derrick Henry and blah, 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 blah. Well, what I liked about Bassinger's article, you know, he prefaces all this with things that actually happened. The final score was 28-12. There's no denying what Tennessee did. He says, what happened? A bad game at the wrong time. He says, but to Neanderthal football guy, it was a complete repudiation of the Ravens and their accomplishments, and the truth is it really wasn't. He says, and I'm quoting now, if only we had Derrick Henry would be the wrong conclusion. Sure, it would be nice to have a 6'3", 250-pound human bulldozer in the backfield, but it's worth noting a few things. He goes on to say, one, there's only one Derrick Henry. Two, Derrick Henry has turned it up lately in the pro season, and hats off to him, but overall this season, I mean, what he's done, I'm not saying he hasn't been good all season, but what he's done in the postseason in particular is unprecedented for anybody, including Derrick Henry himself. He's got 377 rushing yards in his team's first two playoff games. No player had ever done that until this past week. He had only rushed for 180 yards. I say only, I mean, that's 180 yards, but he'd done that only five times in his career before this you know, run here, and three of those performances now. Excuse me, he'd only done it twice in his career. Then he's done it three more times in the past 3 weeks, so now he's only done it five times in his career. And that's something that you need to be aware of. It's called recency bias. The thing that happened the most recently is often the thing we think of as the thing. And another good point, which I really think people need to look at more closely, don't just use yards per carry as a measure of efficiency. It's how often you have successful carries. You know, if you average 5 yards a carry, but it's because of a couple of big ones that you broke for 40, 50 yards, you still may have only had a couple of carries in a game, or three or four carries in a game that were a positive play, a successful play. For example, 13 of Henry's 30 carries against the Ravens were for 2 yards or less. And so, you know, I'm not saying he didn't have a good game. Those yards you get on the big carries count just the same, and they can set up touchdowns or score touchdowns. But the point is, you know, and Mike Allstott used to kind of have this. He'd have one of those awesome runs where he'd knock down six tacklers and just carry four guys on his back and surge ahead for 15 yards, and everybody would blow their A-train whistles and go absolutely apeshit. And it was cool. I did it too. I was at all those games, and everybody loved Allstott. But he'd also have like 30 carries in a game, and like 24 of them would be like for 2 yards or less, you know. So it's like, yeah, he had a couple of flat, big carries, whatever. But on I remember his third and two or less rate, his success rate was like lower than some of the really small, like whippet running backs that were out there. And so, you know, you have to look at all those things is all that's being said here. And at the end of the day, running the ball, as Bassinger writes, is not the winning formula old school analysts and fans purport it to be. They're looking for confirmation of what they already believe. And as we should know by now, if you've listened to this show or if you've, you know, followed anything regarding this type of stuff, teams don't win when they run. They run when they're winning. And you see it every single week on Twitter. Somebody, some old school, you know, reporter or writer will write like, well, the so-and-so is 15-1 when X running back gets 25 carries in a game. Let's keep an eye on that. No, they didn't win because he got 25 carries. He got 25 carries because that's the way the game unfolded. They got out to a lead. You know, they were. And listen, again, the Titans are really good. I'm not taking anything away from the Titans. Or I should say they've been really good. But even after seeing what I saw this past weekend, are you backing them this weekend? I mean, maybe with the points, maybe. I'm talking about just straight up. Do you think they're going to go into Kansas City and win? I don't. I didn't think they were going to win to Baltimore and win either. They did. Hats off to them. I'm not betting on it happening again. And not just because of their style. I just think Kansas City's better. If Tennessee was throwing the ball more, I still wouldn't think they're going to win. The point is, any given season, you know, we could have 1 year next year where four teams that do X, Y, or Z are in there, and we'll say, oh, well, X, Y, or Z is the way to do it. But the year before, the year after, teams that do X, Y, or Z aren't in there. It's very random. It's very... You take a body of work longer than one season to make any decision about how a team should approach things. Hey, when you hand the ball to a guy, would you rather him get 3 yards or 10? Of course I'd rather get 10. I'm not saying running the ball doesn't matter here. I'm just saying don't go nuts. Don't think, oh, the Bucs need to go out and beef up their running game. You know, the Bucs offense needs to cut down on turnovers. That's basically what it needs to do. Everything else is A-okay. And however they can figure out to do that, whether Jameis does it himself or somebody else comes in and does it, that's what the Bucs need to do, is not turn the damn ball over as much. And I'd love to see another running back in here. You know, Ronald Jones is great. There's a lot of talk about what they'll do with Peyton Barber and if it could be another guy. And again, that'd be awesome. That'd be awesome. But that is not. Like, don't think for 1 second that is one of the pressing issues that this Buccaneers team faces going into 2020. Because it most certainly is not. It's not for any team, okay? And that doesn't change just because the Titans happen to make the AFC Championship game this year. And they may end up making the Super Bowl. They may surprise everybody and win on Sunday. And if for no other reason than their uniforms, I'm rooting for the Chiefs, because God, it would be such an ugly uniform matchup in the Super Bowl to have the Titans versus anybody. But I think the Chiefs, first of all, every year I do this, and it never works out. But every year when we get down to the Final Four, you start looking at the four possible combinations of Super Bowl teams. So we got, I guess we got Titans, Packers, Titans, 49ers, Chiefs, Packers, Chiefs, 49ers. Out of those four, I'd like to see Chiefs, 49ers the most, Chiefs, Packers second. I don't really care about either Titans combination. I don't want to see the Titans in the Super Bowl. I just don't want to see that. But every year it seems like it doesn't work out. This year, all I'm asking for is a Chiefs win. I don't even care who wins the other game. Although I think Chiefs 49ers would be a really good game. Yeah, they could all be good games, but I think Chiefs 49ers would be a really solid game. I'd look forward to seeing that. As long as the Chiefs win, I'll be happy. And speaking of uniforms, and yeah, I'm going to bring it up on the show because it was big news this week. The Atlanta Falcons announced they're making a change. Now, I don't know what they're going to do. And let me tell you something. Their uniforms aren't good right now. They're that real busy, like real extra striping, weird angles, and just the usual crap you get from Nike that's supposed to look modern but really just looks messy and just disorganized. So I don't know what they're going to come up with, but as long as Nike is involved, like, don't get too excited. And this is what the thing with the Bucs, if and when the Bucs change, I mean, they obviously need to, but how can you be sure it's not just going to get worse, or at least maybe just be different but not better? Look at the Titans, for example. You know, they had bad uniforms, I thought, and they're like, okay, we're changing them. It's like, oh, okay, cool. And the ones they changed to are actually, I think, worse than their old ones. But they certainly didn't get better. And every time there's a change by any team in this Nike era, it's worse. Like, it's never like a team changes and they get better, right? Like, who's better now than they were before Nike changed them? You look at the Browns. The Browns looked really good. Now they look like a joke. They're changing back because they look so dumb with that stupid, like, the word Browns down the side of their pants. I mean, come on. So, anyway, the point of all this is, Greg Allman asked the Bucks what their plans were, if there was anything in the works. You know, there's been all these rumors. The Tampa Bay Times ran the big Fix the Bucks uniforms thing, which I appreciate them doing, and thanks to Thomas Bassinger for getting that whole thing rolling because it brought awareness to this. And it seems like there's consensus now amongst the fan base that this is something that needs to happen. So Greg Allman asked the Bucks, you know what they said? They said no comment. They didn't say no. They said no comment. Now, I'm probably reading too much into things, but when it comes to this, I'm going to read a lot into it. But it'd be very easy to say, nope, we're good. We have no plans. They didn't say that. They just said no comment, which is what I would say if I was planning to make a move but wasn't ready to announce anything yet. And I think it will happen in the next few years, but I just wanted to bring that up. It deserves to be brought up. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is my email address. BobbyGameDay at yahoo.com. On Twitter, you can get me at BobbyGameDay. Oh, there's one more thing I wanted to get to that I hadn't mentioned yet. It has to do with Luke Kuechly announcing his retirement. So that was a surprise. I mean, he's been playing. I didn't realize how long it's been, but he's got 9 seasons now in the NFL, which if you had told me how long is Kuechly, if you had asked me how long has Luke Kuechly been playing, I would have said, hey, he's like 6 seasons now, right? He's had his 5 years. He's coming into his 6th year, something like that. That's what I would have guessed. Well, he's played 8 seasons. This would have been his 9th season coming up. He's only 28 years old, and he announced his retirement this week. And you look at him. You look at Rob Gronkowski, Calvin Johnson, the guy from the 49ers, Chris Borland, who only retired after like 1 or 2 seasons. And there was nothing, like, he'd been fine. He didn't retire for any specific injury. And there's a lot of people out there that have been saying this week, and they say this every time another player retires, you know, does the NFL have a problem with young guys retiring? Oh, Andrew Luck, I forgot him. Is this something that should be telling us something about that? I don't think it is, though. I mean, I think guys are making smarter decisions for themselves than they used to. The money's bigger now, which can work both ways. On one hand, you can play for 5 years and have more money and have enough to be set for life, depending on what type of player you were in those 5 years. And on the other hand, you're leaving a lot more money on the table than you used to by announcing your retirement. But I think having more money already in the bank probably amounts to more. And, you know, it's like I always say, and I'm a fan of a bunch of sports. I'm not just a football guy. I mean, I love baseball. I love hockey. I love golf. I love tennis. I'm not a big NBA guy, but I like basketball itself. I'm just not a big NBA guy. I like watching college basketball. So I love sports in general, but football really is the perfect sport except for this aspect of it. And there's just no way around it. Like, if you could somehow play football, and this would be true of any sport, but it happens a lot less than the other sport. If you could somehow play football, and when you're done playing football, know that you're just going to have a completely normal life and everything's all good and it's not going to take a physical toll on you. I mean, but other than the injuries, really, it's perfect. Like, it's just the perfect game, in my opinion. It's the most like life. It's the most entertaining because of how few of the games there are, the way the schedule is set up, the rhythms of a football season are so much different than the rhythms of any other type of season where they play over and over and over again. Just all those things, I mean, that to me is the way it is. But this is just part of the deal with football that can't be avoided. So when guys realize that, play as well as they can, get as much as they can, and then try to retire at a time when they still feel pretty okay and don't feel like they can or don't want to do, either they can't or don't want to play the game at the level it has to be played. I don't think it's a football problem. I think we should actually be happy that more guys are realizing this and are making this decision. And again, I always want to see, you know, there's 32 teams, 53 guys on a roster. I want to see 32 times 53, that many people, that should be the best X number of people. I'm not going to do the quick math in my head right now. But that number of people should be the best football players in the world. So when there's guys that could be amongst that number of people that are voluntarily not playing, yeah, you don't like to see that. But I don't think it's a big problem. If anything, I think the opposite. I think if people realize that there's a way to do this and get out, you know, maybe that'll take a little more pressure off of football, that it doesn't have to be something that you bang your head into the wall for 15 years for, that you can play for a few years and make some money, and that's that. And it's a hard game, man. One of the things I'm most amazed at, one of the things that separates upper-level football players from just regular guys, and it's not like this in every sport. If you have like basketball or baseball or, you know, even hockey to an extent, you know, there's so many different things that make a professional level player as opposed to a really good player who's just not quite good enough, or, you know, a guy who maybe has athletic ability but can't quite do the job. But in those sports, usually, if you're physically the best, you can do it. But in football, there's a little extra thing that makes guys better, and it's just their willingness to play at an absolutely all-out, hair-on-fire level all the time. And I never had that as a football player. Every single time I've ever gone to tackle someone in football, I let up just a little bit right before the point of impact because I know I can probably get him down anyway. Maybe he'll get an extra yard or two, but I don't want to bang my head into him full speed, okay? I play for the Dunedin Pirates now, which is semi-pro, which I've told you about on this show before, which any of you can play for if you want to. It's 18 and over. It's an adult football. I usually call it the Adult Football League. They call it semi-pro, but there ain't anything pro about it. I call it the Adult Football League. Go to DunedinPirates.com if you want to find out more information. There's teams all over Florida. This is real football, pads and helmets, not flag football. And we play a 10-game schedule. And I still do that at age 39 because I love football. But even in the practice drills, I let up just a little bit, you know, when I go to do the tackling drills or whatever. I don't even like doing them. And what always amazed me about upper-level football players, and I don't just mean NFL. I mean, even watch a high school game, and you'll see some kids different than others, not just in how good or athletic they are, but some kids, the way they'll go for that hit. It's if you ever stand on the sideline of a football game, the higher the level, the better, whether it's NFL, college, but again, even high school. It always amazes me. And at the NFL, everybody does it. And in college, everybody does it because you wouldn't be there if you didn't do it. The level that these guys will go to just to prevent the other guy from getting an extra 6 inches or something. I see it all the time in these NFL games, just watching on TV, much less if you stay on the sideline. And a guy will come up to make a hit, and he really probably could have just hit him a lot less hard, still got mostly the same result. But if he doesn't do it that way, he'll lose his job. And they just absolutely flat out just fly at each other every single millisecond that they're on the field. And I could never, even if I had the athletic ability to do it, which I'm not saying I ever did, but even if I did, I could never play that. That's why I played wide receiver. I like to run routes and catch the ball. You know, you're going to get hit, curl up, find a, you know, going over the middle is no fun, but at least most of the time you have some control. It's actually worse, in my opinion, to be a tackler. Because you just have to, again, if you want to actually get noticed, if you actually want to advance anywhere, no matter how athletic you are, you have to fly from distances, from close spaces, whatever it is, and do not let the guy even get another inch and hit him as hard as you possibly. That's what you're supposed to do. And hell, if I'm going to do that, I mean, I would never do that. I would never, even though I play football, I don't care if my coaches on my semi-pro football team are listening or not, I will not do that. It's just not my nature. These guys do, and that's what separates them. So Luke Kuechly, like, he's not saying he can't play football anymore, because he could. But he knows the level that it takes to be out there. Not just your athletic ability, because I don't think his knees are aching or anything. He can still run and play the game just fine. But the level of absolute, just complete recklessness. And that is the best word for it. The just total, unabashed recklessness that it takes, just on a routine play. I don't even mean like the biggest play of the game, goal line stand. Just on some 2nd and 7 from the 35 with 10 minutes to go in the second quarter, and they run a toss sweep to your side. And the absolute recklessness you have to approach that one play and then get up and do it again 40, 50, 60 times. He's like, I ain't doing it. I can't do it anymore. Not that way. I get it. And that's one thing about football that's both beautiful and sad, really. I wish football, you know, you can't play it any other way. You really can't play it, not well. So I totally get it, and I respect Luke Kuechly for making the decision. It's an easier one to make when you have as much money as he does, I understand, and a lot of these guys do. But hey, It doesn't mean football has some long-term pride. I still think people overblow that. It just means guys are getting wiser to it right now, and if they're understanding that this is a better thing for them, I think that football can exist just fine under those circumstances, and it's going to lose people every once in a while that you wish it didn't lose. But, hey, those guys being healthy going forward and living normal lives. I mean, he's 28 years old. He's right. I mean, you're just getting into your prime at 28. He's stepping down. Hats off to him if that's what's best for him, and I wish him luck. So anyway, thanks to all of you again. As always, I love hearing from you. If you want to email me, the email address, bobbygameday@yahoo.com, BobbyGameDay. On Twitter, same thing, @BobbyGameDay. That is the Free Stretch. Divisional playoff weekend over. Conference championship weekend ahead. I'll talk to you next week. It'll be the Super Bowl bye week. We usually have some fun on that edition because it's a little more of a free-flowing show. There's not any one thing going on. We'll talk about the Super Bowl matchup, obviously, and some other things as well. But thanks to our sponsors at Bill Curry Ford. Thanks to JoeBucksFan.com, the single best place anywhere in media, not just the internet, but anywhere for Bucks coverage. And thanks to them for giving me this platform and getting me in front of all of you, and thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Bobby Fenton. Enjoy the conference championship games this weekend. Wherever you are, be safe. Gasparilla Children's Parade, I'll be on a float. Look for a bald guy on the crew of Italia float. If you're out there, bald jack dude, stud, you won't miss me, don't worry. In the meantime, whatever you do, wherever you are, be safe, have fun. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.